Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dave Lincoln. Happy Monday, February 2nd to you. We appreciate the fact that you've joined us. Many of you are listening to us via streaming or podcasting. It's just good to know that you're out there, and we're here to provide the latest, updatest, the most information possible to you. You know, we're flooded in a world of information, and it's digesting it all, and it's nice to have a place where you can go to kick back and just listen to what's going on. We've got an exciting program today for you, and we have a special guest, Mercy Jimenez of Covered Bond Investor. Excited to have her here, and we're going to be getting into that in the Hot Topics segment. But as we do every week, let's get off and get started and get a rate update. Joe Farr, MBS Quote Line, good
hey,
to
Dave.
Have you with us again.
Well, thank you. Today's starting out to be a quiet day. We've been pretty close to unchanged for the day most of the time. We're up 2/32nds right now. No economic news released during the day today, so it's just been a bit of a quiet morning. Last week, though, we can't say the same thing. We had a down week for mortgage prices. Mortgage rates went up, prices went down. And, you know, it seemed to have more to do with statements made by the Fed and the Fed minutes than with any of the economic data. I'll go over the Fed comments first, and that had to do with whether they were going to sit on their now $1 trillion mortgage-backed security portfolio for the foreseeable future, or to possibly begin selling those mortgage-backed securities. And you might remember a couple of weeks ago, Dave, we reported on Bernanke's comments about how he was going to utilize the various tools to slow the economy and to tighten monetary policy somewhat. And,
right.
And it seemed from comments he was making that selling mortgage-backed securities was going to be very low on the list of things that they would do. And in fact, that week the market improved because of that. But this week, I guess both the Philly Fed president, I don't know if it's Ploser or Plosser, suggested in a speech that he preferred selling MBS sooner rather than later. And then about an hour later, this was on Wednesday, about an hour later, the Fed minutes came out, and they confirmed that several members of the Fed were interested in selling their portfolio sooner rather than later. So it kind of put a shock in the market, maybe shock's too hard a word, but MBS prices fell both Wednesday and Thursday, and for the week, despite relatively favorable economic information, MBS prices fell about half a point, a little more than half a point on the week. During the week, we got a very good report on inflation, CPI, which is primary measure of inflation. Actually, the core CPI fell for the first time, first monthly fall in consumer prices, core consumer prices, since way back in 1992.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, and the annual rate is very, very much
very manageable.
Very manageable. So, favorable economic information. No real surprises in any of the other announcements. Favorable economic information didn't trump the concern that the market would have if the Fed did start selling. I mean, think about they're sitting on $1 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities right now, which is equal to a whole year's worth of origination activity.
And it felt more like whiplash from Bernanke's comments to what the Philly Fed's coming out and saying and other Fed officials are saying. Yeah. It's just we don't need that. We just do not need that. If they want to slow, I mean, there's one thing slowing the economy down. Another thing is to just put some serious get rear-ended and you feel like the whiplash. I can't think of a better one. What do we got coming up this week? New sales, home sales, I know.
Yeah, we got some housing data coming out this week, new home sales, existing home sales, new home sales tomorrow, and the existing home sales on Friday. Durable orders comes out on Thursday, and another measure of manufacturing activity, Chicago PMI, comes out on Friday. But I really think that the thing that will be most interesting this week to the market is going to be the Fed auctions. They have a 2, 5, and 7 year auction starting Tuesday, going Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, respectively. And you might recall 2 weeks ago when the Fed auctioned off their 10 and their 30 year securities, very, very poorly responded to by the market. Very poor foreign participation, weak demand overall. And the Treasury had to offer higher yields to attract the buyers. And, you know, that comes on the heels of a report that in December, China became no longer was the biggest holder of U.S. debt. Japan is now. But all in all, in December, foreign investors dropped their holdings of U.S. Treasury securities by $54 billion, with China being the one that dropped the most. And so, you know, that's not a big amount given how much they own, but at the same time, it's very interesting to see that they are not increasing their holdings of U.S. debt, and at a time when the U.S. is offering lots of debt. So this week's Treasury auctions may be pretty interesting to watch.
Now, it's going to be real interesting to see what happens this week, especially with the developments in China, which have been such strong buyers for us. And you know, we're back to the Japanese being the strongest, you know, the largest debt holder. That's really interesting. Anything else coming up this week that's
One more. Bernanke is...
Bernanke.
He's sitting before Congress on Wednesday and Thursday, giving his semi-annual state of the economy presentation, or testimony is what they say, and you know, I don't know that there's going to be a lot new come out of that, although during some of the Q&A things could come out, so you know, it's certainly worth noting it's going on. But again, I think this week the attention needs to be placed on the Treasury auctions, and you know, the auctions are short-term Treasuries, 2, 5s, and 7s, but how they are handled, how well received the auctions are, could have an influence over the mortgage market.
Interesting. It's going to be that is probably the most significant thing. We're all going to be hanging on every word that Bernanke says, and then as a big backdrop is how those 2, 5s, and 7s auctions go. It's very interesting. Joe, thank you so much as you bring us forward and look, give us an update and a good analysis of what's going on in the interest rates. We appreciate it so much. We'll be right back right after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteland delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back. This is David Lickin with Lickin' on Lending, and it is again February 22nd. We're excited to have the traffic report. And you know what? I love, Alice, what Joe said earlier on our pre-call. It may be some divine intervention that we had the snow out there in the D.C. area. I mean, in spite of all the suffering aside for the snow, but just the fact that we were able to delay the momentum of some of these bills is encouraging. So not a lot of changes, but give us an update on the legislative traffic report.
Yeah, I think I know. I think we do want to be a little thankful for that. Slow things down a little bit, as all of them seem to have some challenging implications for the industry. So just to give everyone an update on where we stand today, many of you have probably heard on the news right now that the credit card bill is going into effect. It actually went into effect yesterday. But, you know, the bottom line is the fine print, and the banks are still going to figure out a way that you're going to pay a higher interest rate. So I like the talk that's going on out in the radio and the news media that's still in the fine print, says buyer beware, right? Beware of the fine print on all of that. They're starting to talk now about extending the home buyer tax credit. That's starting to get to where people are concerned. It is 60 days away before this expires. The home buyer tax credit is due to expire April 30th. You know, obviously the Realtors Association believes this is holding up the housing market. Other people think maybe this has run its course. Is it really helping as much as we think it is? So those discussions are starting. Time to talk to your Congress people about that. The actual bills that we're watching, though, as Dave mentioned, it's been kind of quiet on this front. So the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, this is the one that would establish the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. We've had plenty of shows on that topic. That didn't move. The Banking Integrity Act of 2010, you may have heard us talk about the Volcker Rule. That's House Bill 4461. Again, this is kind of proposing to stop commercial banks from working with investment banking, you know, from having certain affiliations. So a little bit on that too big. There's also the too big to fail, House Bill 4516. Same thing, no action on any of those. I think the ones people seem the most concerned about, Dave, as we've talked about, would be like the Reg Z, the Truth in Lending proposed rule. It's got a lot in it, but that was the one that has the loan officer compensation issue in it, and we're still waiting to hear what is the result going to be on the comments for that one. And then also the other proposed rules for and with FHA for lender approvals, that hasn't gotten anywhere. And I think what we wanted to do is just talk for a minute here about my visit out to Washington, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you were actually sitting in behind doors. Yeah,
in
Philly, yeah.
The wrong city. Yeah, out of the Philly Home Ownership Center. Yeah,
well,
it wouldn't be
surprising if you were a little confused. You have been doing a lot of traveling lately.
Well, I had Washington snow on the brain since we're getting 8 inches of snow right now. But, yeah, we did meet with Ingram Lloyd, Jerry Glavey, the heads of the Philadelphia Home Ownership Center, and talked a little bit with them about some of the issues. And, you know, they're still weighing out what's going to go on with lender approvals. They're interested in everyone's feedback on that still. So you do want to all get your voices heard on that one. The FHA is dealing with a lot right now. The biggest news out of that meeting I can share is post-endorsement technical reviews. The post-endorsement technical reviews, I always looked at, I mean, as an underwriter, I would get these as an underwriting manager. These are the audits that come in from HUD that tell me what's wrong with my files. I took those very seriously. I mean, and we tell our clients, heck, you're getting written up. You need to respond and take that very seriously. Well, HUD talked about that. Well, we've always considered those to be a training tool, and we are going to be changing our PETR review processes going forward. Those PETR reviews are now going to be very strong, and they're meant to be a QC action now. And so expect more on that out of FHA in the future, that they're going to be tightening up and changing the rules for post-endorsement technical reviews and making those much more strong, have a stronger impact.
That is significant, and it's so nice to know that we're getting to get that extra perspective that what's going on, you know, the news before the news, so to speak. Alex, that's great. Anything
well,
else
like
that you
scare
want to
people?
Well,
you
no,
like
some,
to
we're going to be,
ahead of
we're
them,
gonna be
yeah.
we're, and we're going to be talking about that a little bit later in the program, towards the end of the program. Some information that's coming out of HUD and some things that we're personally experiencing, or that we're experiencing through our clients. And we really want to bring this information forward. So you want to stay tuned all the way through for the rest of the program. Alice, anything else that you have for us that's important?
Those are the hot buttons.
Everything's important. I don't mean to imply anything's
right,
important, but anything that's for this segment. You know what I mean.
That's where we're at for right now.
Well, good. I want to tell you guys want to stay tuned and listen in on what's coming up. We have Mercy Jimenez the co-founder of the Covered Bond Investor. It could be the future of liquidity for our industry. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back, everybody. We want to let you know that there is so much going on, and we're all concerned about liquidity in the markets. Our next guest, Mercy Jimenez, the co-founder of Covered Bond Investor, is with us, and we're so excited about that. A little background on Mercy. She has an MBA from Harvard Business School. I always love talking to the Harvard Business grads. I'm talking to several of the students that are in the MBA program there. It's always such a joy. Good thinkers, good critical thinkers. So she has that in her background. She has 20 years of experience within the financial services, kind of all corners. She's been with within the mortgage industry. She's been with Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, Fannie Mae, most recently held a senior position there. And what we have her on the program again to talk about, we had her back there in January, mid-January. We're excited to have her back again to talk about the topic of covered bonds. Mercy, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what is the legislative update since January 18th when you were on the show. I know there's been some developments, or have there been any developments? Hopefully so.
Well, while you and Alice were celebrating the fact of some legislative delays on other fronts, when it comes to covered bonds, I'm afraid those 15 days of snow paralysis did not help us. We still don't have any of the formal amendment or the standalone bill as proposed by Congressman Scott Garrett, Dave. But I do understand that several drafts are circulating for refinements. So informally, I know that's happening. It's advancing the ball, but the timing is still unknown.
Yeah, we want to see that get advanced because we do believe that this is a critical component of the future.
Absolutely.
Mercy, this is Alice. I wanted to check in to see, you know, what are the – I understand you were at a roundtable in Washington, D.C. and on January 29th. Can you tell us a little bit about the topic of that, why the U.S. needs covered bonds?
Sure. Well, we timed it well because it was before the major first snowstorm, Alice. Our attendance was oversold, and we had hundreds of people on the webcast as well. You may recall that our hosts varied from the National Association of Realtors and the MBA and SIFMA and Clayton Holdings and many others. The panelists of which I was a part, we decided not to make any prepared remarks, but really to allow the audience to ask questions to their heart's content. And questions they did indeed ask, and we covered the entire gamut from truly trying to understand what the benefits of covered bonds in the U.S. would be, all the way to more practical issues of how soon do we reasonably think it can happen.
Well, Mercy, that just, you know, comes straight to what I'm wondering, and I'm sure there are others out there that are wondering sort of, I mean, we've talked about covered bonds, and I know you explained them last time you're on, but I'm a little bit slow. So can you help just kind of put, you know, a very broad framework around what a covered bond is and sort of from the mortgage perspective, you know, how would it be used and who might use it?
Sure. Well, in its most basic form, it's simply a debt instrument. It's structured like a bullet bond, and all that means is that the investor expects interest payments as opposed to both P&I, like an MBS.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be longer maturity, 5, 7, 10 year, although in today's tough market environment, they have been seen going to shorter maturities. The most important difference, Joe, is that they have dual recourse to a segregated pool of assets as well as to the issuer. And they tend to be very high quality, conservative underwriting. And although they're very new to the U.S. market, they've been around over 200 years over on the other side of the Atlantic.
And so who of the people out there in the mortgage world do you think would be inclined to use this as a financing tool?
Yes, I would certainly speculate that the first takers are going to be on balance sheet lenders who already have loans on balance sheet or who have a process to retain loans, Joe, because this is not a like securitizations where you originate to distribute. You actually keep the cover pool on your balance sheet. I think the first movers are likely to be some of the largest mortgage lenders because they have the resources to do so. But I would think some middle-tier players that have so many whole loans on balance sheet would like to look at this as an alternative, cost-effective source of funding. Even if they don't need it immediately, Joe, you and I know that any treasurer would say the strength of having lots of funding sources is rather obvious.
So right now it's probably not as good an execution for somebody that can sell a loan or a group of loans into a agency mortgage-backed security, is it?
I think that's absolutely right, Joe. In fact, the very first issuance I would expect to be in the space where we do not enjoy subsidized funding, either from the GSEs or from the implicit guarantee in the bonds that the Federal Home Loan Bank uses to issue advances. I think where the opportunities short-term will lie are in jumbo mortgages or in commercial loans or even multifamily loans, wherever the GSEs are not subsidizing the rate.
So these loans that are used as collateral, kind of like there's been a discussion lately, and I think it's been resolved favorably for the loans that are in a mortgage-backed security are like not available at all to a liquidator of an entity, if the FDIC were liquidating a bank. Would the loans that have been put in this pool that are the collateral for covered bonds be subject to a regulator coming in and taking them?
It's a critical question in terms of what ultimately makes its way into the legal structure that Congress is entertaining, Joe. If you go back to 2008, the FDIC has already provided guidance on what happens to an FDIC institution that is issued a covered bond. And they did something very important. They reduced the stay period after a default so that instead of the assets getting caught up for 90 days, it was only going to be a 10-day period. However, it's still a 10-day period, and there are certainly legal structures in Europe where they are very definitely segregated assets, and the bondholder knows they don't have that risk. I would also point out, you know, B of A has issued a program for covered bonds that they've issued, and their bond got downgraded by Moody's because there isn't a legal structure that would prevent all the assets having to be liquidated within 120 days in the event of a default. And that's enough to concern investors and have them demand a higher yield.
Which really goes, Mercy, back to the point that we started out on, is about, you know, the need for this. And as you, the snow delay that happened, this, you know, what many in the mortgage industry are rejoicing, slowed down certain legislation related to the mortgage industry, it unfortunately has hindered the progress. What is the momentum within the Beltway, Mercy, for changes or for them to recognize the value of the bond covered bond program, and what is the momentum behind those changes? Is this something we can anticipate coming soon?
Sure. Well, the best way I can answer it is to look objectively at how to measure that momentum between the kind of interest that this roundtable generated. 2 days later, ASF conference, which also took place here in D.C., had standing room only in their covered bond session.
Wow.
When I attended the hearing that Chairman Barney Frank ran, I can tell you that on both sides of the aisle, you saw as much interest and sense of urgency to be able to do it right when it comes to the covered bond legislation. So I would say to you that both from a standpoint of Congress as well as the lending industry, there is tremendous interest and more momentum than I've ever seen, Dave.
Yeah, it's encouraging to hear that, Mercy. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about, get into that momentum a little bit, understanding. I've got some thoughts I want to share with that. But let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Dave Licken. Sometimes I forget which spot has a intro in it and some doesn't, but let's get back into this. Mercy, this is so interesting. I thank you so much for being willing to come back on the program and be with us. Hopefully we're going to have you on a regular basis, just bringing us updates on what's going on. So let's talk about that room. You were in the hearing where Barney Frank was presenting or was hearing the information about it. Was the questioning coming to you that gave you a sense that they knew what they were talking about, or is the questioning where they're still trying to discover this? I mean, we're coming off of a bad hangover, as to use Bush's expression, on Wall Street getting drunk on some experimental products. Now we're starting what is something that's unfamiliar. Is there a hesitancy, I guess is what I'm trying to get to, in moving forward?
Well, there's always a hesitancy, David, on anything that's unknown, and I will tell you the kinds of questions I heard in the hearing demonstrated that there is still such a gap of knowledge in the U.S. on covered bonds. There were very basic questions, and then there were some terribly sophisticated questions about being able to think ahead how this plays out in a market like the U.S., which is so large and so different from the European market. But I would say to you that the Canadian neighbors we have are probably our best educators on the topic because they don't yet have a legal structure, and they've been extremely successful in their issuances.
You know, I think, and Joe and Alice, I've just got so much interest here, so don't let me dominate this. Come in with your questions. But I really have an interest because I sense, this is when I bring this up and talk to different industry leaders, and when we're talking to those within the Beltway, whether it be the legal profession, and it seems like we're talking to a lot of attorneys these days with stuff going on about HUD, and we're going to talk about that later in the program. But we're finding that a lot of them get this blank look in their eye when you say covered bonds. You've got a real educational process ahead of you, and at least that's what it seems like. It's as much education right now to get this thing moved forward as anything.
That's absolutely right, and that's why I applaud what you're doing on your show, because it's by having this dialogue, allowing people to ask the basic questions, and more importantly, to compare it, Dave, to what we do already know. I was in the secondary MBS market for so many years that one of the things I did at the very beginning, and anyone can go on coveredbondinvestor.com and get it, was to do a grid and compare some key variables between a covered bond and an MBS. Because let's face it, securitizations are what we know in the U.S., and it's on that basis that we have to help explain this product.
Well, and Mercy, isn't it more, it's not only trying to get a grasp on what it is, what are the high-level benefits and downsides, but you also then have to start drilling down into actual execution and what does it mean to sales and someone who can try and forecast these numbers. I mean, is it something we're really going to have to watch a group of maybe B of A and a couple of the large players play around with these a little bit and kind of do a watch what happens before we're going to get people who say legislation, here's what to do in legislation. I mean, do we even know what we need to do?
No, it's you're anticipating some of the questions we heard in the roundtable, Alice, because immediately any mortgage lender wants to know, how does this change the origination process or the delivery process or the secondary or servicing, which is so very important? And a lot of it, we have to wait and see what the legal structure looks like to answer that. But we do have a lot of insight in how other players have managed it, not only in Europe, but also in Canada. And I think some of the large players, as well as some of the brave middle-tier players, will be the prime movers to get their feet wet and be able to iron out the kinks and really pave the road for others. But, in financial services, any new product demands that very process.
Mercy, you mentioned earlier that it might be a good tool for somebody that's a jumbo loan originator to use. And, boy, it seems to me like if this instrument could make the jumbo market more liquid to bring more people into it to make jumbo loans more readily available to the street, you'd get a lot of momentum from originators, the origination side of the world, because it's tough on the jumbo market's tough right now. Can you see that this vehicle would make jumbo lending easier to obtain from an originator's perspective?
Yes, a lot of experts in this arena, Joe, are really pointing to jumbos as well as commercial loans as likely targets for the first issuances because there are no subsidized rates for the most part in those two spaces. And because so many of those loans are already sitting on balance sheet, You and I know how very little liquidity there's been for jumbos lately, and lenders have just had to keep it on balance sheet. There aren't a lot of buyers for a jumbo PLS. And the same is true on the commercial side. A lot of people don't realize that only about 25% of all new commercial loans recently have gone into a CMBS. That means they're all sitting on balance sheets. And I understand that delinquencies are growing, but unfortunately all the loans are getting thrown under the bus, and there are a lot of quality loans sitting on the books.
One of the questions I have is, I'm a free market kind of guy. I support free markets as much as we can, less government intervention. Does covered bonds, in fact, support more of a free market position rather than deep in government involvement, such as we have with Fannie and Freddie now?
I am totally convinced, Dave, that this is one of the few bridges available to us to bring private capital back into the mortgage lending business. It's certainly the way it's used in Europe, Canada, and other parts of the world, and it would be a very tangible way to bring it back into the U.S. I will say this, it doesn't preclude one from thinking about a U.S. covered bond from potentially having some parts of the cover pool or even some of the whole loans being guaranteed by a government entity or a third party, for example, a mortgage insurer. Why do I say this? If you take a look at what was issued last month by the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce, CIBC, in that $2 billion U.S. covered bond issuance, the loans were actually guaranteed by the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, which it has the full faith and credit of the Canadian government. In addition, the draft of the amendment that Congressman Garrett put out did provide for allowing a small portion of MBS actually joining whole loans in a cover pool. So all of this is TBD, but I do want to fertilize your imagination with the thought that says it could be a hybrid.
That is interesting because it sounds like it could go either way. And where it seems like we're becoming less free market oriented in this country and more leaning towards more of a government sponsored, totally government insured programs. And I think the appetite for that is dramatically shifting in this country. At least that's what it seems like. We'll be right back after this word. Stay tuned. We've got more.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Good to have you back. This is Dave Lincoln. You know what, Mercy, we're watching the Olympics up in Vancouver, B.C., part of the country I just love. I'm from the Pacific Northwest. At least that's where I started my career. Love the country up there. But you were talking about how the Canadians have really effectively used this. So we're not just talking about our friends over across the pond, but we're talking about our friends just to the north of us. Get in a little bit, explain what the Canadians are doing and how effective it has been for them.
Yes, well, several Canadian banks have issued covered bonds. They tended to be non-U.S. dollar denominated bonds. But last month, a very, very important innovation was rendered by CIBC, as I mentioned, Dave, because it was the first time after the financial crisis that the Canadians, or frankly, for that matter, anyone, has tried to market a foreign-issued covered bond to U.S. investors. I would add a footnote here that says Canadian banks have traditionally been extremely conservative, stable, well-capitalized, and that means that their yields are really low compared to a lot of other issuances. But this issue by CIBC was so successful that I just read this month in the Wall Street Journal, the bonds are trading at a premium on the secondary market. There is that much U.S. demand. And, you know, I am really struck that the U.S. investor is getting access to foreign-issued covered bonds, and we still don't have the means to do it for the U.S. mortgage lender.
That has got to change. And hopefully, if you're listening to this and have an interest, first of all, you should go over to Mercy's website. It's packed with some really good information. And if you want to listen to this program, she's going to have it posted up there as well. You can listen to a lot of the topics that we're talking about and about this, and read what the press releases are. This is a development, listeners. You need to be on top of, paying attention to. You need to be when you're, for those of you that are talking to your senators, and I'm telling you, you know this theme, everybody. I've been telling you, get out there, sound informed, and be intelligent when you're talking to them. This is a tool you can add when you're speaking to your representatives. It gives you one more tool that they need to get behind it. They need to support it. If nothing else, just forward to Mercy's website. It's a wonderful website. And Mercy, what is that website one more time?
Sure. It's coveredbondinvestor.com.
www.coveredbondinvestor.com. I encourage you to get over there and listen to, well, read what's there. You can also listen to this program. It'll be up there for you to be paying attention to and getting information. Mercy, one of the quotes that's in your bio that I really love, and it's a great segue to the next areas, and we're going to shift a little bit. There's so much more. We want to have you back. Number one, listeners, stay tuned. When Mercy is going to be back, you will want to be listening to the program that day because there'll be, I'm sure, development's going on. But, Mercy, one of the things I want to move the program towards a little bit is what's going on in HUD. And I loved a quote that you have in your bio. He says, today's financial heroes are, or should be, the lenders that didn't play fast or loose and get themselves overextended. That is such an important part. And I'll tell you, there's a new sheriff in town. Many feel he's wearing a black hat, but he's really wearing a white hat. He's doing his best to preserve the integrity of the HUD program. And I'm talking about Dave Stevens. David Stevens, I'm watching some things go on there. It has been, as Alice was saying when she was in Philly Hawk office about some of the developments that are going on there, there is an essential need for HUD to preserve the integrity of the program. And, yes, it is having some consequences, and it doesn't necessarily feel friendly. Some of the things that actions that appears that the MRB, the Mortgage Review Board, are taking, some of the things that David Stevens is doing, doesn't necessarily feel friendly to those that have been participating in the program. The problem is because a lot of us that are – I'm not going to put myself in this group. A lot of people participating in the program, Alice, were not paying attention to what that program is about. And I want to talk about that. That's some things. And, Mercy, I'd like to have you jump in here and say, how does covered bonds help? And is this a movement that the that is going to be help advance covered bonds? So let's move that direction. Alice, let's get a little bit more into this new.
Oh, just the change is going on. I think what you're seeing in HUD is a – can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah. Mercy, I can.
Okay.
Alice?
All right, great. What you're seeing is that customers who jumped into this space in 06 and 07 as the subprime market was going away, they had a perception of FHA. And a lot of companies and DE underwriters who knew the product of old underwrote to older guidelines that allowed some higher risk loans to just get in the system. And then a lot of people did not adjust their mental thinking about what is risk on a loan. And that wasn't managed well when we had, you know, pretty good real estate market still going on. Then as the market continued to get worse, all of this stuff just continues to rise to the surface, and FHA has to start to put some boundaries on it. And in some respects, the investors have done that for them, you know, by setting score floors and some other boundaries on underwriting criteria. And it's going to continue. It's something they have to do to keep the fund under control. So the grand debate now is, the lenders. Should the lenders police the smaller companies and the brokers and change the wholesale world?
A lot of people said that the FHA program was the new subprime. You know, when the subprime went away, is that true? Do you think that's been used, and is that what HUD is now fighting?
We absolutely saw that. We actually had customers calling us up, you know, especially in the West Coast that weren't familiar with the FHA product. They joke around about that being the mini HOC over there because their volume, their loan amounts were so high they weren't even eligible. So you had this simultaneous increase in the maximum loan amount that FHA would take, and then that opening up an entire part of the country that never did FHAs before. And all they could do is go down and read the highlights of the program. You know, I can take a bankruptcy only a year ago. I can do this. I can, you know, there's no credit score in a refer. And they put all those risks on one loan. So there was absolutely, we were getting calls from customers saying, take a look at my subprime portfolio and tell me how much of this can fit FHA.
That's such a good point. I mean, there was an article that in the Wall Street Journal that I was quoted in, Dave Stevens and I were quoted in, and I had an interview with Nick Timmeros at the Wall Street Journal, and one of the comments I made to him some time ago was the fact that there was another unintentional bailout of the banks. A lot of banks saw the portfolio. They dabbled. They were hesitant to move into it. They weren't a part of one of your heroes, Mercy. They kind of got dabbling off in that higher-risk product. And what happened is they saw the climatery change, and they go, man, quickly move this product off, and let's get it sold to HUD. And it was originally designed to be more of a, quote-unquote, subprime product, and they shifted that over quickly before the door started closing. Now, that kind of set the barn on fire, and now we got Dave Stevens in there trying to fix this thing. And, folks, I'm telling you, do not vilify this guy. He is trying to save a program that is critical for it. Mercy, how do the covered bonds play into all this? I mean, you're going to hold a greater piece of the risk if you get involved in covered bonds, are you not?
Well, let me say two things, Dave. First, on Dave Stevens, I just really have to applaud the efforts he is making to instill risk management discipline that has not been funded or staffed in the past. As I'm sure you know, he brought in a first-time risk manager, and I think the kind of lender reviews they've been doing are extremely appropriate. And so I think he is coming up from behind and has taken some very, very valuable steps. On the covered bond side, I got great insight from the German Association of Pfandbrief Banks. They are, in effect, the gold standard of covered bonds. And we were asked in the round table, well, if covered bonds are just about, you know, 60 and 70% LTV loans, what do we do with everything else? And the German Association described how it is common in Germany to have a borrower sign more than one loan. And what I mean by that is at the closing table, the first 60%, the first lien, may go into a covered bond, and then it's layered on with a second, and it may even be layered on with a third-party guarantee for the remainder. All I'm saying is I think we're going to have to think very creatively about how covered bonds interface with the existing system we have in the U.S., which public policy dictates should have some government help.
That's good. Yeah, we're in a situation, again, I'm Dave Asman of Fox and I talk about this, the free markets. We want to get as much government out, but you know, once you start drinking up on that fountain or drink that Kool-Aid, it's hard to get off that
yeah.
without having yourself a major hangover, if not just, you know, have your whole system go into seizure. And I think
That's
we're in
well
a place
said.
There.
Well, and I think if you try and have, if you were to bring up to FHA, would you be interested in being a second lien to a covered bond? I'm pretty sure somebody might have a heart attack. if you want me to what? No, I mean, so that sounds like a space for, you know, private lenders, not necessarily a government product. I mean, FHA right now has got to figure out how to get their risks under control, but then still keep within their mission statement that they're there to serve low to moderate income borrowers, you know, people who are potentially underserved by some of the GSE requirements, and that's a balancing act to walk within right now. So one of the things we see them pushing at is if they push enforcement, then that by itself forces lenders to tighten up without FHA having to be the bad guy and say, here's your score for it.
Yeah. I want to echo something you said, Alice, a little bit earlier, and we've got 9 minutes in the program. I want to go another direction. Just and Mercy, you can prepare yourself for this question. It has to do with what else do you see out beyond covered bonds that you think our listeners should be paying attention to. So kind of be thinking on that question. But Alice, you made a really good point about Southern California, which did that discovered the subprime market. I don't know if they really we want to lay that totally at their feet, but I think we could. I don't think that's too far from it. But the reality is a lot of people that did a lot of subprime in Southern California, and they did see HUD as the – I mean, we had people that were calling us and say, we need to get HUD approved. I said, why is that? And they'd say, because – we found this really cool new subprime investor out there. It's called HUD. And, I mean, it just – I'm a DE underwriter. I've been a DE since mid-70s, and it just caused the hair on the back of my neck to stand up that people actually view that program as a subprime program. I'm telling you, folks, if you have that idea, if you see that, you need to rethink your program. You need to get someone in there to begin to help craft your strategy into a proper expectation. And if you don't, you know what? You got problems. Number one thing what you could be doing is look at your own compare ratio. We've told you where to go, been previous websites, our previous programs, what website to go to. If you don't know, call us. We'll help you with that. Alice, give me your phone number real fast so they can call you if they have any questions on that.
Oh, it's 800-278-0200. So 800-278-0200. And what we help people with is identify, you know, how deep into trouble are you? Do not wait too late to call, because we have had companies call us. You know, Dave and I have used the analogy of you go into ER and you're going into ER with, you know, your jugular's cut, and there isn't anything we can do to save you. But we need companies to call early in their first notices from HUD to make sure you've got procedures in place to handle them properly, have the proper reactions, and be very careful of some of your old school underwriting. That's some of the stuff that, depending on which school, could be getting you into trouble. Common sense underwriting sometimes doesn't work. You've got to say, here are boundaries. Setting underwriting boundaries is what you'll need to do.
It's so important, and I can't stress one more point that you made that's just so important, is, you know what, don't wait until you're in trouble. I mean, if the first sign of anything, if you see your HUD ratio above 100, you go, 100? Man, mine's been 200-something. If you see it above 100 right now, they were tolerating much higher ratios. They weren't focusing on it. I'll tell you one thing right now. Dave Stevens and the group are focusing on it, and it's because not that they're trying to create a problem. What they want to do is preserve the program. So get your attitude straight about that. Don't be bagging on Stevens. He's doing his job. He should be doing it. Like Mercy said, we applaud what he does. So let's shift one question. Got 6 minutes here remaining beyond the program. Mercy, what else out there? You're so knowledgeable. Everyone from MBA Harvard with a Harvard MBA is just the most intelligent person on the planet. We all know that.
Well, you've got to remember I was born on a Cuban dairy farm, so my credentials take me only so far, Dave. David.
Well, I'll tell you, that is even stronger for you. We're proud of you. So what else out there in the industry should people be paying attention to?
Yeah, the only other kind of far-out product, and we have to learn to walk before we can run in the U.S., but I would certainly encourage people to take a look at what the Danish covered bonds are like. George Soros, of famed investment savvy, wrote a wonderful opinion piece for the Wall Street Journal on Danish covered bonds. And what makes them really unique is that each individual borrower, in effect, holds their own bond on their individual mortgage. And there are all kinds of things in that structure that allow the borrower to benefit from increasing rates when they have a low rate product, if they want to sell their bond. It is very far out there, but it has actually worked for many decades. And I think it starts to give us some semblance of the possibilities that we are nowhere near in the U.S.
Well, there's definitely some things going on in Europe that are ahead of where we're at. It sure feels like that, both from a technology standpoint, both from a standpoint of just how to finance things. Europe has had some tremendous pain. I mean, you think we're under pain, folks. You got to see what's going on across the pond there. Alice and Joe, jump in here with any comments. We've got 4 minutes as we wrap up the program. Anything you want to jump and add to this? Joe?
Well, skin in the game legislation, if that passes, sure seems like if you're an issuer of covered bonds, you might be able to make your own rules in that. And
you're quite right, Joe.
You know, as an originator,
and good.
Well, you know, you think about it as an originator, you may say, I'm only going to sell my loans to a covered bond issuer because they don't require that I keep skin in the game. Because they've got confidence in their programs and their the people their counterparty, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have, like Alice, if they do have an understanding of the risk management, then that's good. But many of them have more of an origination mentality, and their whole view, Joe, Alice and I are dealing with this with several of our mutual clients, is their whole view of risk management was, can I get this loan purchased by somebody? You've got to be a little bit more mature in this.
Well, and then just my closing remark would be, just because you've been audited by the FDIC or a bank regulator or HUD for that matter, if in an exit interview they have said, well, looks like things are okay, don't believe them. They are not there to educate you necessarily and save you from everything you could be written up for. We're dealing with several clients right now where even in exit interviews or their quarterly audits, the auditors didn't see the signs that a solid operation review can find to head off the problems before they occur.
Well, folks, it is so good to have you be with us. Mercy, thank you so much. We got to have you back.
Well, I always love being with you guys.
Well, we are going to have you back. The feedback I've gotten just with some of the tweets that have been coming while we've been talking, I'd love to get all your questions. Folks, I want to say thank you to Blog Talk Radio for making all of this possible. We want to say thank you to Andy Elvey, who's our producer, to make this thing sound reasonably professional. We're getting a bunch of mortgage folks. We're trying to just bring you information in this manner. We say thank you to Andy's contribution. Joe and Alice, it's always good to have you be with us. I'm so grateful to you for what your contribution each week to this. Folks, get this message passed around to other people out there. It's a very valuable tool. Read that printed material, but now you have an audio source that you can get updates on what's happening. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned. I mean, tune in next week. We're at the end of our program. Have a great day. Mercy, have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Elvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.